place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Tired of what the mainstream news tells you or how the politicians are trying to take away America's freedoms? Ready for a change? Join the master of provocative insight, Dwight Lilly. He will take us
down the rabbit hole.
But no need to worry. He will lead us through the maze of half-lies and fake news to the light at the end of the tunnel. Knowledge is power, and ignorance is a ticket to slavery. Join Dwight as he tries to help bring knowledge to the public that will crack down on the ever-increasing dissent in the world today.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here for November the 26th, 2021, the day after we celebrate Thanksgiving here in the United States. I believe Canada, listeners up there, you'd be celebrating your version of Thanksgiving next week, I believe it is. But I was reading up on Thanksgiving the other day and doing some research for this show. I had several sources that I was going to use on his show because the narrative that we have been led to believe about Thanksgiving and the history of the early settlers in our nation and how that all came about is flawed. You know, they always say that the winner of the war writes the history. Well, I don't even know if you have a war here that we're talking about. Thanksgiving, a day of giving thanks, a day of remembering our past pioneer, I guess you'd have to say, heroes in one sense of the word, but other people would look at them as fools, you know, deciding to leave the country that they lived in a more comfortable life and make it across the ocean to this continent here. It's called the New World. It's not really a new world. That's another narrative out there. Oh, well, the Native Americans came across the landmass when an ice age was underway and created the lowering of the water that they could just walk from Siberia, across into what's now Alaska and down the coastlines, blah, 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 blah. Well, it seems like every time there is a book written to trying to define what the history is of an area, another archaeologist comes along, another scientist comes along, and dispels it with even more information, because that's really what we're talking about here, is information, getting information to help us to understand what happened way back when, and why, in the case of Thanksgiving, we are a particular type of people. The narrative that America is a Christian-founded country based upon a early founding of the Pilgrims, way before we were ever a country, coming here in 1620, about 160 years before the Revolution and the forming of our country, how that shaped the thoughts, but it did in a certain way, because they were a God-fearing people. They were Christians. But like today, what does it mean to be a Christian, and what does it mean to be God-fearing Christian with a set of values? I looked at several different sources of information, and it wasn't all hunky-dory between the Native Americans and the earliest pioneers there at Pilgrim's Landing, which is not really where they land. I mean, the whole story is goofed up, but in reality, the Native Americans have been dealing with what do we call them? Native Americans? We used to call them Indians. Now we call them Native Americans. It's all this awoke, critical race. They're all of the, you know, blabbling on here, but it seems like the narrative gets down to right where you got to watch what you're saying, what language you're using. Now, I've always known the indigenous tribes of the United States to be an Indian. And that term was used for them because, again, the historians of way back when thought that the original inhabitants of this North America continent came from India, or that Columbus had actually landed in India rather than, I mean, there's just all sorts of these variations of historical information out there. That to order to get to the truth of the matter, I don't know if we'll ever get to the truth. Why don't I just stop right there and say, I don't know if we ever get to the truth on most anything. This show here, Journey Down the Rabbit Hole, is really what it was based on, is that the more research I've done in my life, the more I found out that what I thought was real was false. And what I used to think was false is real. And what I used to think was paranormal is normal. And what I used to think was normal is paranormal. Anyway, but the story of Thanksgiving, I'm gonna go over a story here. In fact, I'm going to read you the transcript of the true story of Thanksgiving as what many consider the most famous of all radio broadcasters, Rush Limbaugh, who passed away about 9 months ago, I believe it was, from lung cancer. But Rush, on November the 24th, 2020, he had on his radio show a segment that said the true story of Thanksgiving, and I'm going to read it to you right now. It said, he starts off, this is going to, right as he was saying it on the air, so some of this is going to sound like a radio show. So my second book was See, I Told You So. The first book is The Way Things Ought to Be. And the second book, See, I Told You So, Chapter 6, Dead White Guys, or What the History Books Never Told You, The True Story of Thanksgiving. Now, normally what I do is simply read from my first book, But there has now been another book added to the Rush Revere series. And the first Rush Revere book is Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. These are children's books that were written to help young people get the true stories of America's founding because so little of it is actually correctly taught. In the children's book version, both Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims, I went into a little bit more detail about the Indians, the Native Americans who helped the arriving pilgrims, and what the story actually is and how the true story of Thanksgiving has been observed by what is taught, what I was taught, you were probably taught. Here's the version that you were probably taught. The pilgrims arrived here after an arduous trip across the Atlantic Ocean. They didn't know why they were, had no idea what to do. They had nothing. The Indians took pity on them. The Indians saw them, and the Indians saved them. The Indians taught them how to do things they didn't know how to do, like grow food, catch beavers, stuff like that. The Indians saved them, and the pilgrims thanked them by growing a whole bunch of food and having this big feast. So the story of Thanksgiving that's taught is basically how without the Native Americans, there wouldn't be a country because the pilgrims would have died. At least the pilgrims were nice enough to pay the Indians back with a big Thanksgiving dinner. Well, that's not all that what happened. It's not even close to what happened, which is why I decided to write a book about it. Now in the Revere book, the children's book, as I say, I went into greater detail about some of the Native Americans who provided assistance to the arriving pilgrims, particularly a young native by the name of Squinto. Now I'm going to show prep today, and I come across... Now I'm doing show prep today, and I came across a story in The Federalist. I quote from this website all the time, and I'm reading this story here. And by the way, folks, it is, I don't know, it's right out of the Rush Revere book. And it's right out of my See, I Told You So book. There's a whole lot of discussion here of Squinto, who he was, what he did, how he helped, the detail. The point is, the true story of Thanksgiving is spreading and I couldn't be happier about that. Bottom line, it is spreading. I'm just going to cut to the chase here before getting into reading the text. The real story of Thanksgiving, going back to the very first early days of the pilgrims arriving at Plymouth Rock, is that socialism failed. The real story is that socialism failed. This is crucially important today because we have just elected a Democrat Party that is going to implement socialism if they win these two seats in Georgia, and they're going to try regardless, but if they win those two seats in Georgia, you can say goodbye to the United States as you know it. It will become a socialist state. It will begin the process of becoming. Well, we're way down the road towards it anyway. So it is crucially important here for people to understand this. It's not antiquated. It's not a cliche. It's not something that you can make fun of people about. You know, it used to be when I first started this show in the late 80s, early 90s, if you dared to refer to the Soviet Union as communist, people made fun of you. Ah, come on, Rush. You see a communist behind every rock. And they tried to ridicule you out of identifying communists and communism. Castro, the Chicoms. I never buckled, but I took a lot of, but a lot of people did, and they're now doing it now. If you say the United States, the Democrat Party's on the pathway to socialism, They make fun of you. They mock you. Come on. You don't believe that. You can't believe that. That's just silly. And they try to mock you and make fun of you to silence you. But folks, it's real. Now, the story of the pilgrims begins in the early part of the 17th century. The Church of England under King James I was persecuting anyone and everyone who did not recognize the Church's absolute civil and spiritual authority. Actually, the state, those who challenged the ecclesiastical authority, and those who believed strongly in freedom of worship, were hunted down. This is in England in the 1600s. They were hunted down and imprisoned, sometimes executed for their belief. A group of separatists, people who didn't want any part of this, firstly fled to Holland. They liked wooden shoes and cheese and established a community. They were there for 11 years. And after 11 years, about 40 of these separatists who liked wooden shoes and cheese, agreed to make a perilous journey to the New World. They had heard about it, some new exciting place that hadn't been developed. They knew that they would face hardships like you and I don't know, and I'm not preaching to you. I'm just telling you, we don't know the hardship these people endured. We can't. We are way too advanced now. People who lived in the 1600s would not believe life today. Try to explain flight, jet travel. They wouldn't understand it. They find they would face hardships, but paramount importance to them was living freely and worshiping God according to the dictates of their own conscience, their own beliefs. That's what they were denied, the freedom to do in England. So on August the 1st, 1620, the Mayflower set sail. It carried a total of 102 passengers, including 40 of these separatists, the pilgrims. There were just 40 of them. They were led by William Bradford. On the journey across the Atlantic, you talk about something that had to be frightening and scary. The Mayflower was not much bigger than a 50-foot boat, and 102 people on it. On the journey, Bradford set up an agreement, a contract, if you will, that established just and equal laws for all 40 members of the pilgrim community, irrespective of their religious beliefs. It didn't matter what their religious beliefs were. These were the laws they were all agreeing to live by. Where do the revolutionary ideas, these laws, come from? We're talking about the Mayflower Compact. That is what Bradford wrote. The Mayflower Compact derived from the Bible. The pilgrims were a people completely steeped in the lessons of the Old and the New Testament. They were devoutly religious people. No matter what else is said about them, and even that is denied, they were devoutly religious. They looked to the ancient Israelites for their example, and because of the biblical precedents set forth in Scripture, they were never doubted that their experiment would work. They never doubted they would get to the New World. They never doubted that once they got there, they would thrive. The journey was long, and it was arduous. It was dangerous. And when they finally landed, when the pilgrims finally landed in New England in November, according to William Bradford's detailed journey, they found a cold, barren, desolate wilderness. Imagine New England as it exists today, as nothing but rocks, forests, undeveloped nature in November and getting colder. There were no friends to greet them. There was no shelter of any kind other than hiding under a tree. There was nothing, folks. It was desolate. There were no hotels. There were no inns. There were no places to clean up. There were no houses. I mean, this was real hardship. The sacrifice that they had made for the freedom to worship was just beginning. During the first winter, remember, they arrived in November. During the first winter, half of them, including William Bradford's own wife, died of starvation, of sickness, exposure to the elements. Now we're getting close to what you were taught in school. When spring finally came, and by the way, writing that doesn't do it justice. Spring didn't just finally come. It was a survival. It was an act of survival that you and I could not possibly rate to or understand. American Special Forces can. Military people who've been trained can understand what the Pilgrims were. You and I can't. We've never done anything like that first winter in the New World. They survived it. Spring finally came. They did meet the Indians, the Native Americans who were there, who did help them in planting corn and fishing for cod. They showed them where the beavers were so the beavers could be skinned for coats. Another thing. You animal rights people are not going to like some of this history, but it happened. But even at this, even with this degree of assistance from the Indian, the Native Americans, there wasn't any prosperity yet. They had the Mayflower Compact. They had these laws they were living by, and there was no prosperity. And I wonder why. Now, this is important to understand here, folks, because this is where modern history lessons end, with the Indians teaching the Pilgrims how to eat, how to fish, and how to skin beavers and all that. That's where it ends. And that's the feel-good story. But that doesn't even get close to the true story. You know, Thanksgiving is actually explained in some textbooks as a holiday for which the Pilgrims gave thanks to the Indians for saving their lives. It wasn't that. That happened. But Thanksgiving was a devout expression of gratitude. The Pilgrims to God for their survival and everything that was part of it. Now here's the part that has been omitted. The original contract the Pilgrims entered into in Holland, because they had sponsors, they didn't have the money to do their trip on their own. They had sponsors. There were merchant sponsors in London and in Holland. And these merchant sponsors demanded that everything that the Pilgrims produced in the New World would go into a common store, a single bank, if you will, and that each member of the Pilgrim community was entitled to one share. So everybody had an equal share of whatever was in that bank. All of the land they cleared, all the houses they built belonged to that bank, to the community as well. And they were going to distribute it equally because they were going to be fair. So all of the land that they cleared and all the houses that they built belonged to everybody, belonged to the community, belonged to the bank, belonging to the common store. Nobody owned anything. They just had an equal share in it. It was a commune. The Pilgrims established a commune, essentially, a forerunner of the communes we saw in the 60s and 70s out in the state of California. They even had their own organic vegetables, by the way. Yep. The Pilgrims, forerunners of organic vegetables. Of course, what else could there be? No such thing as processed anything back then. Now, William Bradford, who had become the governor of the colony, because he was the leader, recognized this wasn't going to work. This was costly and destructive, and it just wasn't working. It was collectivism. It was socialism. It wasn't working. The first winter had taken a lot of lives. the manpower was greatly reduced. So William Bradford decided to take bold action, which I'll describe when I get back from the break. So anyway, listeners, there's another little part of this story here that Rush wasn't commented on, is the slavery issue with the Native Americans / Indians. They, like I'd started to explain, had relationship with white people before the Pilgrims got there, and it wasn't a good one. There were white people that came and basically stole Indians, and they sold them into slavery in the Caribbean. It was quite a slave trade going on with the indigenous peoples up there in New England. And so the tribes that were up there were very wary of this new group of settlers that came up there to their part of the continent. And they had their own council and met about what to do with these people. Out of the wisdom of the council that they had, which was a council made up of the elected leaders, yes, the Indians had their own democracy. Each sort of sub-tribe had their own leader that had been elected, but there was a main overseer chief, and he called this powwow together, and they said, well, what are we going to do with these people? And the thought was, well, we'll just go massacre them. That way we don't have any problems with them. They said, well, yeah, but if we do that, I mean, we know that there's more and more of these people going to come. And eventually there'd be so many of them overwhelming us that we would lose out. And so they decided to form a peace pact with the settler. And that's kind of the rest of that story. But I'll be right back after the break. We'll finish up on Rush's story.
This is Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. I pulled some strings and gotten you front row seats to my new show, The Perfect Triangle. Live Friday, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio Studio A. The Perfect Triangle is equilateral, three sides of the same length. In an angry, bipolar world, three perfect sides reveal many truths.
Body, mind, and spirit.
Thought, word, and deed.
Conspiracy, propaganda, and truth.
Natural health, allopathic tyranny, and your body.
Freedom, globalism, and sovereign nations.
And so much more. Each week, the Perfect Triangle will blast through fake news lies, champion the natural way and natural law, unravel the Orwellian deceptions of our corrupt government, reveal the satanic evil of globalist banks and transnational corporations. Tune in every Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Broadcasting live from the peak of Mount Warning, the most easterly point of Australia, tune in to the Free Manatee Radio Show with your host, Spread Love, every Monday, 6 a.m. EST. On the show each week, we discuss realistic solutions to help you observe rather than take part in the globalist agenda. We will dig into the past to find solutions for the future. We will discuss the wisdom of Ayurveda, the science of life, for techniques for understanding and achieving personal health and longevity. Please join us every Monday on Studio A, 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Free Manatee Radio broadcast with your host, Spread Love. On Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio.
Hey, all right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here with a journey down the rabbit hole. Before I keep going, I want to remind the listeners that Revolution Radio is a listener-supported radio network, and we depend upon you to help pay the bills here. So please, at freedomslips.com, our home website, hit the donate button and give generously to Revolution Radio. You can also become a Patreon supporter. That's what I did. And the instructions are right there. If you click on it to lead you down that path, you can set up a regular donation and it comes out of your chosen payment preference and you don't have to think about it. There's also a storefront there you can click on. And from time to time, we have new products. We have different things in there, coffee mugs, T-shirts, and any purchase on that. Remember, Christmas is coming up. You might want to buy somebody a gift. The proceeds go to what? Support Revolution Radio. So please give generously to Revolution Radio. Okay, I was talking about Thanksgiving in the half hour and relating to you guys the results of my research on the topic. I was thinking about this before the show. My memory going back into the early 1950s up in Olympia, Washington, where I grew up at the old Washington School. And the teacher, I believe I was in the second grade, had instructed us to color a picture of Thanksgiving. She used to like, God, it's a really hazy memory I have here. So I hope I'm not creating history here. But I can still, in my mind's eye, picture the different artwork, I guess you would. Because when we would do the coloring of whatever our picture was, she would put it around the walls of the classroom so we could go up and see our picture. And when our parents came for whatever they came for, those, you know, they have the parent teacher conferences. I don't know if they have that anymore, but they did when I grew up. The parents can see what we've been creating on the wall there. But I can remember the story of Thanksgiving being told by the teacher and as it was related to me throughout my life, about the traditional story of Thanksgiving, how the pilgrims were thanking the Indians with a big feast for helping them survive. A part that Rush didn't talk about, and I didn't get a chance to mention, in the first hour was that when the pilgrims came and landed, they actually spent that first winter on the Mayflower because they didn't have anywhere to live. And it was, again, November up in New England is brutal, to say the least. And it gets worse in December and January and February, so forth. My friend, Ron, who my wife and I had a Thanksgiving dinner with, Ron and his wife, Sonia, late yesterday afternoon at a restaurant. That's what we do. We don't cook a big dinner anymore. We go out to eat. Anyway, Ron's from New Hampshire, which is up in that New England area. And I asked him, I says, hey, Ron, when was the last time you were back in New Hampshire? And he got a smile on his face. So I'm going to tell you, he says, 30 years ago, so I guess he must have met 30 years ago, he went up there and his son, and I don't know if he said, remember if he said his anybody else, they went out someplace to check out something, sightsee. And he said the wind was blowing about, he said, he mentioned specifically that the wind was blowing 61 miles per hour and the temperature was 30 below zero. So you can picture what the temperature would be with a wind chill factor of 61 degrees, excuse me, 61 miles per hour, and how cold it was. And he said he'd spent the winter up there, and he said he could never get the house there out warm. Now, he had a house. He wasn't sitting on a drafty boat out in a harbor. So to say that these settlers had it rough is not really appreciating what they were going through. They didn't have electric blankets. They didn't have electric heaters. They didn't have gas heaters. They didn't have coal heaters. Nothing. Just out there facing the elements. I'm sure they had some way of maybe wood and so forth that they gathered to start fires, but it was just a brutal, and they did have a lot of food, and it mentioned that people starved to death, died of the elements and everything. So with Ron ending the story, okay. You know, I mean, because like, yeah, you haven't been back. Because he ended his story, and he said, there's two seasons up there. There's January and July. That's what he said. He says, oh, up where I come from, there's two seasons, January and July. Meaning, I guess, that it's winter up until July, and then you get a little bit of summer, and then it goes back to being winter. I don't know why, and I didn't look into it, why the settlers and their sponsors wanted them to go to New England. Maybe it was a thing with the king that he had a section of land that they could go work or whatever. I don't know why that would be, because you had the whole eastern coast there. And it's a lot warmer down in Florida than it. Yeah, well, maybe Florida was still controlled by the Spanish. I don't know. Anyway, they settled up in the arguably the coldest part of the continental United States. So going on with Rush's story here, he was talking about how they had set up a communal type existence. And this was part of because of an agreement they had with the sponsor that if you were on the voyage and had been sponsored to be on the Mayflower to the New World, everything you were earning didn't belong to you. It went into a communal bank. The land, that would belong to the community. The houses that were built belonged to the community. Any type of crops that were grown belonged to the community. And each of the pioneers would get a share. So going on here, Rush continues on saying, this wasn't working. And William Bradford decided to take bold action. Now he was the governor of the Pilgrim community. And he saw that none of this was working. The Mayflower Compact was not working, giving everybody a single share of stock in the common store, in the common bank was not working. Collectivism It was as costly and destructive to the pilgrims as it is and has been to anybody who has ever tried it. And that would include the Soviet Union, China, Cuba, Venezuela, and so forth. That this collective communist / socialism, it looks good on paper. Hey, everybody kick in, everybody get the job done, and we'll all share in it. Now, it will work on a limited basis. If you say you got a project on your property, or there's four lots, and each owner of the lot decide, hey, we'll all work together, we'll all help each other raise a barn, we'll all help each other fence, something like that work. But when you're talking about a collectivism of an entire society, community of people, it don't work for a lot of reasons. So Bradford decided to scrub it. He threw it out and took bold action. He assigned a plot of land to each family, and every family that had the plot of land, they could work it, manage it however they wanted to. If they just wanted to sit on it and get fat, dumb, happy, and lazy, they could. If they wanted to develop it, if they wanted to grow corn, whatever on it, they could. If they wanted to build on it, they could do that. If they wanted to turn it into a quasi-business, they could do whatever they wanted to do with their lot. He turned loose the power of the capitalistic marketplace. Long before Karl Marx was even born, long before Karl Marx was a sperm cell in his father's dream, the pilgrims had discovered and experimented with what could only be described as socialism, and they found that it didn't work. Now, it wasn't called that then, but that's exactly what it was. Everybody was given an equal share. They know what happened. Nobody did anything. There was no incentive. Nothing worked. Nothing happened. What Bradford and his community found was that the most creative and industrious people had no incentive to work any harder than anyone else, unless they could utilize the power of personal motivation. And while most of the rest of the world has been experimenting with socialism for well over 100 years, trying to refine it, perfect it, and reinvent it, the pilgrims decided early on to scrap it permanently. What Bradford wrote about this social experiment should be in every school child's history lesson. If it were, we might prevent much needless suffering. If the true story of Thanksgiving had been taught for years and years and years. So, William Bradford, after putting everybody in a common share, the Mayflower Plant Compact, they wanted to be fair. They wanted everybody to have one common share of stock in everything that happened that the pilgrims produced, and it bombed. It didn't work. There was no prosperity. There was no creativity. There was no incentive. Here's what Bradford wrote about the failure. Quote, "For this community, so far as it was found to breed much confusion and discontent." They were not happy, in other words. This community was found to breed much confusion and discontent and retard much employment that would have been in their benefit and comfort. In other words, nobody worked. The way they set it up killed and discouraged work. There was no need for young men that were most able and fit for labor service and service. They sat around and did nothing. They should spend their time and strength to work for the other men's wives and children without being paid for it. Why should they do that? So they didn't. That was thought injustice. Why should you work for other people when they can't work for themselves, for yourself? What's the point? You hear what he is saying, ladies and gentlemen? The pilgrims found that people could not be expected to do their best work without incentive. So what did Bradford's community try next? They harnessed the power of God's, of good old free enterprise, by invoking capitalism, the principle of private property, all the way back in the 1600s. And it was incredible. Every family was assigned its own plot of land, and they could do with it whatever they wanted. This had a very good success, wrote Bradford, for it made all kinds of industrious, so as all hands, it made all hands industrious, so as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been. Excuse me. So when profit was introduced, when the opportunity to prosper was introduced, it went gangbusters. That, my friends, is the essence of the true story of Thanksgiving. Now, this is where it gets really good, folks. If you're laboring under the misconception that I was, as I was taught in school, so they set up trading posts and exchange goods with the Indians after they enjoyed this prosperity. It was not the Indians that brought them to prosperity. It's not said to insult anybody. The Indians assisted in their arrival, undeniably. But what led to the prosperity for these original settlers was the common store failed. Socialism didn't work. It's when they introduced what turns out to be capitalism, they didn't have the name for it. But when they turned loose individual incentive, keep what you produce, sell what you don't need, it went crazy. This is not something they were taught by anybody, by self-experience. It was not the Indians. None of this is said to put anybody down, and don't misunderstand me. The Indians did a lot of things that helped them, which I'll get to in just a second, but it was their own industriousness. They set up trading posts and exchanged goods with the Indians. They sold stuff to them. And those profits allowed them to pay off their debts to the merchants, their sponsors in London and in Holland. And you know what? The success of that colony after they abandoned socialism and tried what was essentially capitalism, the word spread throughout the old world of this massive amount of prosperity that was there for the taking in the new world. And guess what happened? The new world was flooded with new arrivals. The success and prosperity of the Plymouth settlement attracted more Europeans and began what came to be known as the Great Puritan Migration. And all it took was prosperity and the word spreading across the Atlantic Ocean of how there was prosperity, and it was there for the taking. All you had to do was get there and give it a shot. The lesson is, the true story of Thanksgiving is that William Bradford and his pilgrim community were thanking God for the blessings on their community after the first miserable winter of a documented failure brought on by their attempt at fairness and equality, which was socialism. It didn't work. Only when they abandoned it did it work. And then I need to say it again because I don't want people to misunderstand and get noses out of joint. The Native Americans and the indigenous people, the Indians, whatever you want to call them, they were of considerable assistance and they were friendly when the pilgrims arrived, but they had little, if anything, to do with the prosperity that occurred. Because that was the result of Bradford and the Pilgrim leadership deciding to change their structure, to change the Mayflower Compact. Now, Indians assisted naturally. I can't deny it. I mean, they taught them how to fish and this kind of thing that they didn't know how to do. And that led them to be productive, undeniably so. But it was the Pilgrim community itself which experienced this massive prosperity, the word of which spread all the way back to the new old world in Europe and across the Atlantic Ocean. Now, I mentioned earlier that the Federalists had a story on all this, and in it, they described much of what we did in the second book that dealt with this, the children's book, Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrim. That book goes into great detail about how the Indians did provide assistance and what kind of assistance it was, and how valuable it was, and how crucial it was. In Rush Revere of the Brave World, we focus on a Native American by the name of Squinto, Now, as I told you, during the winter of 1620, only 44 out of the original 102 pilgrims had survived, including their first elected governor of the colony, John Carver. And it was an Indian named Squinto came to their rescue. As I say, this is, as I say, explored in every detail in Rush Revere and the Brave Pilgrims. Squinto was no ordinary native. Early settlers in 1610 had captured him and sold him into slavery. A group of Catholic friars freed him and brought him to England, where he learned to speak English. In 1618, serving as an interpreter on an English ship, he was brought back to the New World. It was Squinto, who was a famous Native American in his own right, in the Pilgrim story. It was Squinto who taught the Pilgrims how to plant and fish and how to skin beaver. It was Squinto who brokered a peace treaty between the Pilgrims and other Indian tribes. There was more than one tribe of Indians. It was not copacetic. It was not friendly and at one with nature. It was not anything like the multiculturalist would have you believe. There were squabbles. There were power struggles, turf battles. It was human. The Indians, the Pilgrims, and everybody was scrambling for power, for survival. Survivability was the name of the game, and it was not guaranteed. Now, many of the Pilgrims literally believed that God had sent Squinto to save them, and they believed the Pilgrims believed that without Squinto, they never would have survived or thrived. And they experienced a tremendous harvest in 1621, and that's the big gathering that is taught in the history books. The Native Indians and the Pilgrims joined together for a huge feast, which is the foundational story of the Thanksgiving story that's taught in public school. But again, that is not the real story of Thanksgiving. That's the textbook brand. It did happen, but it is so much more than that. And I love taking the opportunity every year to explain the truth of, especially now given this election's apparent allegedly fallen out. Because even at the Federalists, this is so great that the story is spreading. One of the most important legacies of early settlers is that they experimented with socialism in the 1620s, and it didn't work. Private property rights and personal responsibility, two pillars of a free market economy, saved the Plymouth colony from extinction and laid the economic foundation for free, prosperous nation that we all enjoy today. And that's exactly right. And this is the true story of Thanksgiving that has been what should have been shared with you every Thanksgiving for the last 31 years. So that's Rush Limbaugh, the transcript of his show from last year, November 16th of 2020. And again, Rush was suffering from lung cancer, went through all of the horrible treatment and everything, hung on, and lived. I think he lived just over 1 year from the time he was diagnosed. It's a horrible disease. It's what took my baby sister when she was 54 years old. And anyway, he's no longer doing his radio show, but I'm privileged to have read the transcript, but it was only Rush that could deliver Rush's way of radio. I mean, I couldn't even imagine sitting next to the guy and sharing the podium with him on a radio show. He just had a way with radio. He had a way with getting information across. As you noticed, he repeated multiple times the message of what he was wanting to get across. How many times did he mention the true lesson of that story about that socialism was experimented with and failed? And it wasn't until capitalism was tried and the individual's initiative was the full power of the man was put to use, that prosperity came, and that they were able to have that Thanksgiving in 1621. Now, one other part of the information that we needed to have there that I got from other research is that the Indians were not invited to that feast. They showed up. They showed up in great numbers. There was a lot of brave, a lot of warriors with them, because when the first year had entered of the Pilgrims being there, the Native Americans wanted to make sure that it was understood by the Pilgrims that you are a small group of people, and we've got a large army here in a sense, and if you try to break the pact that we made with you, it'll be dire circumstances. Well, as the story goes, like they said, like what's the guy who used to be on the radio? Paul Harvey, another great radio guy. You say the rest of the story. The pact was never kept. White people did pour into the New World. The slave trade increased. And I believe the figure was something like there were 28 tribes of Native American Indians up there. And there's only three tribes that survived the arrival of the white man. The rest were decimated. And those three tribes are still in existence up there. And they have a cultural center. And they insist upon the true story of the of their relationship with the white man, Paleface, be out there. You know, the struggles that they had. And we should acknowledge that, that our white people from Europe, which is my family, we came later. We came as a result of a famine in Ireland. That's how my family came to the New World. We would probably all still be in Ireland if it wasn't for the famine and the harsh treatment of the English ruling class king. So the history of the ruling class powers of Europe is not a good history. And it helped populate this continent right here. And that's why I frequently talk against the Queen of England and all that paraphernalia that the British people still put up with. They're nothing but terrorists, as far as I'm concerned, that royal family. So anyway, we'll be right back after the break. White Lily.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. There is blood on the wire. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey guys, Scorpio here. Join me every Saturday at 2 p.m. here on Studio A for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show, where we discuss the hidden agendas that impact our lives and uncover the secret societies and the shadowy elite who construct the reality that we are supposed to believe. So be there Saturdays, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, here on Studio A on Revolution Radio, and learn what's really going down.
Lost a little honey on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back, and thanks for sticking around for the second hour of the show. Going to bed last night, I was feeling pretty good. As you know from past shows I've talked about, I invest in cryptocurrencies, and my accounts were doing very well. I woke up this morning to a bloodbath, as most all of the coin prices had dropped 10 to 13, 14, 15% in some cases in value, all based on a news story, in a sense. The Wall Street crowd had their worst drop in stock prices, indexes, in the past year, with the index down 900 points. What was that? Well, the COVID-19 slash whatever new number you want to put there continues on. It's been discovered in Africa of a new COVID variant, and it's called the 8.1.1.529 variant. And it was first known case was in a guy that had AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. And they've now, the World Health has designated it, a Greek letter, Omicron, skipping the widely expected letter nu, and certainly the one following it, XI. And here is what we know. This is courtesy of News Squawk. And it gives the background. Here's the background. Regarded as the most heavily mutated variant of the coronavirus thus far, as it has 32 mutations in the spike protein and 50 overall. More specifically, scientists have highlighted that there are 10 mutations versus 2 in the Delta variant, which is what we've been dealing with lately here, regarding the receptor binding domain, which is the portion of the virus that makes initial contact with cells. This is the part of the virus when it comes into your body of how it makes contact with cells and interacts with them. Well, I've said this before. In my analysis of this whole COVID situation, I believe it was man-made. I believe it was made in a laboratory by Chinese scientists, and I believe its originally planned use was as a biological weapon to kill off a lot of people. That's what my belief is of it. I believe that through this Fauci guy that we have running our program over here in the United States, that his initiative caused United States taxpayer money to be sent over there to help fund the research done in Wuhan, China, the Wuhan lab, where this virus came out of. I do not believe the narrative. Again, we've been talking about narratives in a sense. We're just talking about the pilgrim story narrative and how different the truth is from the narrative that had been told for centuries in a sense. And I believe there's a narrative that's came out about the Wuhan virus that, oh, well, it started off in a wet market for the sales of exotic creatures that the Chinese people eat. They eat all sorts of stuff over there that I've never even heard of. And that somehow that's where the virus started, and it crossed, mutated, and went, was able to enter into the human species. I don't believe that. I believed that the laboratory took the virus, the COVID, which is a common virus, and they caused the mutations so that it would be host friendly with a human being and cause all the destruction we've had. Well, anyway, now there's a new variant, because once this thing's been turned loose, now I don't know if the new variant is a human manufactured variant or not. I have no idea. I just know that the original cow was left out of the barn by carelessness in that laboratory. That's my belief. And it got loose without fully understanding what they'd turned loose. The Chinese decided to hide all the facts about it and not tell the rest of the world about it. And then here in the United States, I believe that my government knew about the virus at least 6 months before they openly admitted that the virus was here, and that the reason it wasn't told to the American people outright is for politics. It was a political hot potato, and they wanted to lie to the American public. And that, I believe, is it's devastating to have your government do something like that to you, but that's what I believe. I believe the facts will come out here in the United States one day, if it already hasn't. All the T's will be crossed and the I's dotted. If, you know, the follow the bouncy ball will show you exactly where the government first discovered it here in the United States. And I don't know about Canada or other countries. I'm talking about the United States. So anyway, the new variant was identified 5 days ago initially in Botswana, about the 21st of November, with subsequent confirmation and sequencing in South Africa with about 100 confirmed cases. Cases have been detected in Israel and Hong Kong, and as of this morning in Belgium. And now you can thank the airlines for helping spread the virus by people getting on the airplanes over in Africa and going out amongst the world. And I'm sure it's all over the world right now. Sequencing data suggests that the 81.1.529 has a different evolutionary pathway, but shares a few common mutations with the C.1.2 beta and delta variants. That said, as we cautioned, this is a update of another article I read last night. They had another article last night. It says, that said, as we cautioned last night, a a significant number of mutations may not necessarily be negative, as it is dependent on how these mutations function, which scientists are yet to establish. Then again, since it is the job of science to fearmonger so that Pfizer could buy an even bigger yacht, assumed it will be a very horrifying until proven obnoxious variant. Yeah, we should all expect for all of the negative news to get out there about this, that this is the end of the world. We should expect that the pharmaceutical companies will want to get funding so they can come out with yet another vaccine without even knowing what the true effects of this mutations are. But expect all the bad news, and thus the stock market, cryptocurrency markets do not like bad news, and that's why it took a hit. Like I said, in the cryptocurrency sector was off 10 to 15% at its worst time. It was recovering a little bit earlier today. But why? Well, this causes fear and doubt about the ability of the world's economies to continue on a path towards recovery from what? Well, from all of the restrictions and shutdowns and everything that we've experienced with COVID-19 that have continued, that have badly affected our economy. And then, of course, as the last story I was talking about, the Pilgrim story and the socialism, we have in the United States and in the West an ever-increasing encroachment of stupid socialist policies. And that has really hampered our economy and will continue. We even have it here in the United States where for the first time in decades, we were totally energy dependent with our own supply of natural gas and oil covering all of our needs, and it had resulted in an export business. Now we can't even supply enough oil and gas for our own people. And we have our president begging OPEC to pump more oil. I mean, you can't make this kind of stuff up. But now we got this virus, so he'll be able to divert the attention of his screwed up economy that he's created in like 1 year. See, the Pilgrims were able to recover within a year when they noticed that their socialism experience was not working. They were in a life and death situation because a failure would mean that they would all starve to death. So they switched gears and went to capitalism. Well, in 1 year they'd grown to where they were prosperous. They could have that big Thanksgiving. In 1 year, it's now November, the Democrats and the socialists took over, and our economy is in shambles and people are starving. 1 year. It can happen quick when you get away from the policies of individual initiative and you start telling everybody, well, we're going to pay for your how you live. You don't have to work. We'll just go ahead and give you extra federal income on top of your unemployment, and you just go ahead and stay home, get out of the job market, kill your work ethic, you know, cause employers to go out of business. Oh, it's you can't make this kind of stuff up, but it's going on. But anyway, getting back to the virus here, it says, the question is it more deadly than the Delta variant or the 19 variant? It's currently too early to determine if the new variant has a higher mortality than previous variants. Reported cases only started rising in South Africa on the 19th of November. So any impact on hospitalizations and COVID-related deaths will not have yet emerged. Yet the fear is out there, fear and doubt's out there. Okay, on the question of testing and detectability, Tulio De Oliveira, the director of the Center for Epidemic Response and Innovation in South Africa, has written that the variant can be detected by a normal PCR test, and as such, it will be easy for the world to track it. It wasn't immediately clear if this is one of those excess fake positive PCR tests, but it's safe to assume now that it is. According to Credit Suisse, quote, one silver lining may come in the ease of identifying this variant via the PCR test. B.1.1.529 has a deletion within the S gene, which can be identified easily via widely used PCR tests. More complex sequences analysis is needed to differentiate the Delta variant. This will help track the spread of the B.1.1.529, both within South Africa and across the globe. Now the question is, how widespread is it? I said it was just found the 19th. As of Thursday, which was yesterday, there were about almost 100 cases detected in South Africa, where it's become the dominant strain among new infections. Early PCR test results showed that 90% of the 1,100 new cases reported Wednesday in a South African province that includes Johannesburg were caused by the new variant, according to De Oliveira. In neighboring Botswana, officials recorded 4 cases on Monday and people who were fully vaccinated. In Hong Kong, a traveler from South Africa was found to have the variant, and another case was identified in a person quarantined in a hotel room across the hall. Israel has also identified one case in a man who recently traveled to Malawi. Belgium has also reported 2 new cases. According to De Oliveira, this new variant seems to spread very quick. In less than 2 weeks, it now dominates all infections following a devastating Delta wave in South Africa. Blue new variant now at 75% of last genomes and soon to reach 100%. The question on transmission. Oliveira explains that the new variant is spreading very quickly. In under 2 weeks, it is now dominating all infections in South Africa following the Delta wave's domination, writing that the variant is now at 75% of last genomes and soon to reach 100%. Additionally, the virus contains mutations that have been seen in other variants and appear to make transmission easier. Outside of Africa, 2 cases have been reported in Hong Kong, one from a traveler from the region, another one who was quarantining in the adjacent hotel room. And most recently, a case has been reported in Israel. In response to this, the UK, United Kingdom, has placed much of South Africa on the red list, with Israel, India, Japan, and Singapore also taking similar measures. Additionally, the European Union Commission President von der Leyen is to propose activation of the emergency air brake to halt travel from South Africa. And then just before this show went live with you guys out there, President Biden here in the United States has announced that there's a freeze on air travel between the United States and South Africa. So there is a reaction happening by the governments of the world in response, and evidently to try to quarantine, cut off Africa. But again, air travel in and out of Johannesburg, in and out of these other countries, how long does it take a 300-passenger airplane with a bunch of people that have got the variant on them to spread this around the world? I mean, unless you can track every single person that came in on the airplane and find out who they've interacted with in the last, let's just say the last 2 weeks. Well, by that time, something as infectious as this variant. I mean, you can see the problem we have here, how fast this happens. Now, on the question of vaccine, it is too early to accurately determine the vaccine response to the new variant. However, the significant number of variants increased the likelihood that current vaccines, which were designed for the original COVID-19 strain in mind, they may be less effective with this new variant. Known variants include those that make it more challenging for antibodies to recognize their presence. Laboratory testing is already underway, according to the South Africa National Institute for Communicable Diseases. Initial thoughts from the institute are that partial immune escape is likely, a view that seems possible given the numerous mutations in comparison to the sequence that existing vaccines were designed against. The first view on this to be from in vitro immunogenicity test, or perhaps from computer modeling of the sequence. Credit Suisse estimates initial lab data could take less than a week to generate, given the sequence is already known and work is already ongoing. The question on whether there be a new vaccine, would it be available in, say, 100 days? According to Pfizer, if a vaccine escape variant emerges, the company expects to produce a tailor-made vaccine against that variant in 100 days. Let me comment on that. It's all about money. It's all about money. Now, we've already got in the United States the booster shot that's been approved for all adults and all children. The original plan that was put forth was that everybody get the Pfizer shot, take the two shots, and that was it. End of story. Then Moderna came out and J&J came out with their vaccine. And with the J&J vaccine, it was one dose was what it was released out, with the Moderna one being two doses. Then it came out that, well, we're going to have to booster the Pfizer vaccine, and the Moderna vaccine was later recommended to be boosted, and now the Johnson & Johnson has recommended it boosted. Every time they boost these and every time they want to play around with a new vaccine, that's going to cost more money. And that's going to be passed on. Right now, when I say passed on, it means that in the end, it's your tax dollars, whatever country you're in, will be paying for this, because the vaccine has been free here in the United States and the other countries out there. But there is no free lunch. You pay for it. You're just using a third party to pay the bill right now. And they put their profit on it. And then we're into vaccine expenses going. It'd be kind of like having a cell phone bill every month or having a, your internet service or your streaming service. I mean, you're going to basically, as far as paying for this, every new variant that comes out, they're going to want you to get vaccinated for. It'll be ongoing, capitalism, free market, as much money as they can make off the people of the world on vaccines. Now you say, well, why can't they just stop the whole thing in its tracks like they did polio and so forth? Well, there's no money in stopping something like this. There's no money in it. You don't want, if you're a pharmaceutical, if you're a corrupt government with kickbacks, you don't want these variants to go away. You want more and more variants so you can have more and more vaccine. Yes, that's devious, what just came out of my mouth, but the whole thing has been devious from the first lab escape and lies told about the virus. I don't know where this is going to end. Neither do you. Nobody does. Okay, the question of impact of efficacy of existing drugs, antibodies, is unknown. There have been significant advances in treatment of COVID since it emerged in the disease waves of 2020. The use of widely available steroids and anti-inflammatory drugs such as Roche's Actemra have significantly improved survival outcomes. More recently, antibody therapies targeting COVID have significantly improved outcomes against COVID variants to date. It will need to be seen if their efficacy is equal against the new variant. Lastly, the recent positive data from oral antiviral agents may also have the potential to slow the spread of any new waves of the COVID. The effectiveness of these treatments against new variants of concern will need to be tested, but lab results should be expected relatively quickly. In human studies should also yield results relatively quickly if they are run in areas where the prevalence of the new variant is high. So the question of what's next? According to Citibank, concerned, see the banks, they're all concerned. You got Swiss, you got the Citibank. Concern over the new virus needs to be balanced against the failure of other concerning variants, such as Beta, also first identified in Africa, to out-compete Delta. The next 2 weeks will be critical to determine whether the new virus outcompetes Delta in high Delta prevalence countries, 2 to 3 weeks. Engineered cytoviruses for the new virus determine neutralization by serum of vaccination and previously infected patients. That takes 2 to 4 weeks. And a real-world data determine rates of hospitalization and death. That should take about 6 to 8 weeks. The implementation of travel restrictions and public health measures may push back some of the above timeline estimates. So there you go. Anyway, let's take another break. The world keeps turning. We'll be right back.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
You going back in?
There's still men out there. When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? Some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. That's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, number one listener supported radio, the printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay, Dwight Lilly back here for the final half hour of the show, and I'm glad you're still with me. If you have not donated yet, please hit the donate button there at the freedomslips.com and give generously to Revolution Radio. We need your support. Okay, I've been up-kicking more and more on this radio show and in my general conversations with my friends and anybody that'll listen to me, this whole awoke, critical race theory, Black Lives Matter, racism conversation, well, I'm tying this in now with this socialism experiment in with the Pilgrims. Anything that they can use, the far left, to move forward their socialist / communist ideals is fine with them, is part of them. And this woke critical race, all of this I throw into the same basket. And I know some of you, I mean, I'm sure I've got people out there that are different, you know, that are blacks, whites, Native Americans, Chinese, whoever you are out there. I'm not attacking you and individually, or what you consider your race. I don't really care what you are. What I do care is that when governments and peoples and I didn't know what the term to put on these people. This congresswoman from Brooklyn, New York, and some of these others. Just nonsense out there. That somehow you are being deprived, I am deprived, because of who we are, who our family is, what our community is, what color our skin is and everything. Of course, there's been people that have been discriminated against and sold into slavery, and there still is some of that going on out there. But it's not to the degree that these people are pushing it down our throats. And The next story I'm going to talk about just really has my blood boiling. And it's, I'm going to read you the headlines of this article I got. It says, this holiday season, the Salvation Army wants a donation and a sincere apology for white racism. If you were to take my genes and your genes, I don't care where you're at in the world, and look at them, you might have some variant that makes your skin darker, your eyes bigger. I have blue eyes. You might have brown eyes or green eyes. You might have black hair. Well, I'm bald, but I used to have really light brown hair, blonde when I was a baby. There is that those differences amongst us. We're like flowers in a field. But your body is fundamentally no different than mine. So the whole idea of race really boils down to looking at the outward appearance of a person. Are they different looking than I am? And there are fundamental differences the way people look based upon where their ancestry settled literally tens upon tens of thousands of years ago. That what developed, and it could have developed because of the climate, who knows, whatever the variant, we were just talking about the variants of the virus, whatever the variant that brought about what a Caucasian looks like is what I'm labeled, or a Negroid, which is a black person to look like, or a Mongoloid, or any kind of oids, doesn't make us different. Are people discriminated because of it? Like I said, yes, there have been. But it wasn't until, and I'm going to lay my battle iron down here on this, wasn't until Barack Obama and it was in a president of the United States that this crap about racism started boiling up in our country, in our conversations again. And and he played upon the isolated cases of blacks being attacked, he would say, by the white racist culture. And the most important case of that was that kid back in Florida that tried to kill basically the neighborhood watch guy, because the neighborhood watch guy caught him walking through the neighborhood there, right, wrong, or different, and they were having all sorts of people breaking into houses there. Is it only blacks that break into houses? Of course not. But Obama used that as a tool to start this racism conversation, and then when nothing, it exploded. Black Lives Matter. Everybody's being picked. Well, yeah, the cops have picked on and killed a lot of black-skinned Negroid people. Like I said, we're all people. Of course they have. And because of economic conditions and other societal conditions, blacks seem to have a higher incidence of crime within their group of people than other peoples do. And so they get targeted more by the blacks, because if you've had enough cases of robbery, for example, and out of 10 robberies, 7 of them were committed by one race, one particular looking type of people, then you start looking for those type of people. That's, I guess it'd be like a subconscious effort to do that. And then if you've had enough problems with people, it's just an escalating thing. It's not right. Nothing's right about it. But this destruction of our society and introduction to socialism and all this, well, you're so deprived because you're a different race, it's just BS. It's be like the pilgrims. Get off of your ass and go to work. Create something. None of us have it as bad as the pilgrims did. My God, I just told you what the weather was like in one of the earlier half hours. Up for my friend up in New Jersey, up in that New England part of the country, it gets cold up there, harsh. And these pilgrims were able to scratch it out and become prosperous. Because of their prosperity, other people came to this continent for the same opportunity. And you've got the same opportunity I've got. I didn't have anything special when I grew up. And I'm just sick of it. But anyway, now the Salvation Army is involved in this thing. It says, with a new discussion guide titled, Let's Talk About Racism, the venerable Christian Relief Organization has succumbed to the inflammatory tenets of critical race theory and anti-racism. Well, let me stop right there. The Salvation Army was never founded to be a social welfare agency. Jesus Christ himself in the Bible talked about social welfare, putting the burden on the individual, the rich people, he would point out, and others. But people, it was never, Jesus Christ never talked about socialism, never talked about critical race theories, and never talked about a woke. He didn't. And homosexuality is discussed in the Bible. It's a sin. So these differences of people that's being pushed down our throat, that it's okay. It's not okay with Jesus Christ. This awoke, critical race, critical this, critical that theory. Never was. But somehow, the Salvation Army has morphed into a Christian relief organization. Relief from what? Relief because you don't want to go to work? Relief because you live in a bad area? Why don't you walk out of there if you don't have a car? Do what the pilgrims did. Just get up and leave. You don't have to. Anybody listening to this show that feels like they're being oppressed, leave. Get up and leave. Do it right now. Turn the internet off. Walk out of your house, wherever your tent, wherever you're at, and take off and go somewhere else and make your opportunity somewhere else if you don't feel it can be done there. But if it's simply because you're too lazy or bought into this awoke racism BS that, oh, I just don't have any chances, I can't survive. You can't survive? What would have happened if the pilgrims had taken that attitude? They wouldn't have survived. They knew that they were going to survive because they were God-fearing Christians. They knew they were going to survive. It says, as Americans head out on Black Friday to make a dent in their holiday shopping list, some are sure to come across Salvation Army volunteers ringing bells as part of the annual Red Kettle campaign. But this year, the global charitable organization wants more from its donors than a donation to the needy during the holidays. With the dissemination of a recent Salvation Army guide titled Let's Talk About Racism, the Christian organization is attempting to elicit sincere apologies from white people for being racist. I'm not apologizing to anybody for being who I am. And you shouldn't either. I'm not a racist. You aren't either. Don't buy into this crap, listeners. Don't apologize to anybody. Don't create a victim by apologizing to somebody. Don't walk up to a woman and apologize to her because you're a man. Don't walk up to a man and apologize because you're a woman. Don't walk up to an old person and apologize because you're young. Don't do it. We're all living our lives out here. We all have struggles out here. We all have our individual needs and desires out here. We're not some big collectivism that everybody has to help everybody else. Charity comes from your heart. The guide, which was compiled and approved earlier this year by the International Social Justice Commission, of the Salvation Army aligns the organization with the ideology of what? Black Lives Matter, anti-racism, and critical race theory movements. They have been sucked in by this crap that Obama started. Defining structural racism as the overarching system of racial biasing across institutional society, the guide declares, quote, these systems give privileges to white people, resulting in disadvantages to people of color. I'm going to state it right now. I have never in my life had a privilege, let alone one based on my race. Every single thing I got, I worked my tail off. I did not have great parents. Most of you didn't either. We raised ourselves. Most of us stumbled through life and figured it out. But now an ever-increasing number of you out there have decided that, well, I've got all these problems and it's not my fault. When you look in the mirror, whose fault is it? It's your life. Deal with it. Live it. Be prosperous. Or if you want to just be a bum, like it was talking about earlier, Rush statements he made in that presentation about the being socialist and just being a bum, well, you got a right to just lay around and be a bum. If you want to starve to death on the sidewalks of San Francisco become a drug addict, become all this, don't blame it on anything but yourself. If you say you're a racist, the reason you're saying it is because you've been told that, not because you are that. Now, there's fringe situations out there. There's horrible organizations that prey on different people, the Nazis and the Ku Klux Klan people. So, but that is not a lot of people. But they're blown up by the news media to make it look like there's this Proud Boys group of thugs that have been confronting the Black Lives Matter thugs. It's not that many people. We're a country here in the United States, 330 million people. Think about that. But all of these problems that people have been having are being played on, the COVID-19 being played on. It's time for people to take control of their own lives. It's time for you to take care of your own life. Don't buy into this awoke, but now the Salvation Army has bought into the awoke thing. It says, defining structural racism as the ever overarching system of racial biasing across institutions and society. Again, the guide declares these systems give privilege to white people, resulting in disadvantages to people of color. What was once an organization with a straightforward charitable goal, for which it has received millions in the United States tax, they always say government funding. No, it's taxpayer funding. There's no such thing as government funding. It's taxpayer funding. The narrative using the word government is erroneous. Your government doesn't give you anything. Other taxpayers give you something. Not the government is an entity voted in, and it's an abusive entity, and it's a middleman entity. The more you use government, the more it costs you, because they take their cut out in just federal largesse and BS. Okay, going on here. U.S. government funding, again, taxpayer funding, appears to have become a proponent of controversial ideas, including those found in the books of Ibram Kendi, whose given name is Henry Rogers, and Robin DiAngelo, both of whom are listed in the guide under the resources, tools, and contributors section. Also featured in that section of the guide is a New York Times 1619 podcast, which has become the basis of some high school and collegiate instruction on critical race theory. If my kid was in a high school and they were teaching critical race theory, I would pull the kid out of high school. You're being homeschooled. You're going to go on the internet. We're going to get you set up, and you're going to graduate from high school on the internet. You're done with that school. I'm not going to have you get your mind poisoned by this BS. Between 2014 and 2021, the Salvation Army received in the ballpark of $10 million from CSOSA, a federal agency that supervises adults on probation, parole, and supervised release in the District of Columbia. The federal agency's mission is to support the fair administration of justice in close collaboration with the community. Over the course of the pandemic, the organization received another $100,000 or so in emergency funding from the Department of Veterans Affairs for homeless shelter operations. And the guide outlines various types of discussions chapters leaders can have about racism and how to operate in an actively anti-racist fashion. Being anti-racist results from a conscious decision to make frequent, consistent, equitable choices daily. What kind of BS is that? Frequent, consistent, equitable choices daily. Am I supposed to run around and make sure am I being equitable in every situation? That is not life. I'm pro Dwight Lilly, and you are pro whatever you are. I'm going to work as hard as I can with the God-given skills I've got to outperform you and outproduce you. That is nature, is what that is. We're not all going to have an equal outcome like they're wanting. If you want to try it, again, socialism and communism never work. The organization's accompanying study guide on racism claims that, quote, the subtle nature of racism is such that people who are not consciously racist easily function with the privileges, empowerment, and benefits of the dominant ethnicity, thus unintentionally perpetuating injustice. BS again. I'm not operating unconsciously in anything along the way I'm managing my life. I get up, brush my teeth, sometimes take a shower and go about my day, and I have an innate ability to be prosperous that I developed and fine-tuned over the course of my life. Nobody made me get up and go to work. Nobody had to tell me to go to work. Nobody had to tell me to go to school. I did it because I wanted to get educated when going to school. I did it because I wanted to make money, as much money as I possibly could, so I could get the things that I wanted. This is the American way. This is why peoples in the Pilgrim's days could produce stuff and use what they didn't have, what they produced that was over what they needed. They sold it to you or somebody else, which created an economy. All on initiative. If you've got to be told to get up and go to work or go to school, then you're a friggin' loser, is what you are. You need to go into the mirror in your bathroom and look at yourself, slap yourself across the face, say, listen, I'm not blaming anybody else for why I'm hungry right now or why I'm on drugs right now and why I got fired from my job last week. It's not because of my race. It's not because of my sex. It's because of who I am. No capitalistic employer is going to fire a productive worker. It doesn't happen in the real world. They're hard to come by. If you're not a productive worker, then yes, you're going to get your butt fired. I would fire you. I fired a lot of people in my business career. You perform or you're out. It has nothing to do with your race. Yeah, but you didn't get me the opportunity, Dwight, because you're unconsciously, subconsciously a racist. No, I'm not. I've had homosexual salesmen. I've had black salesmen. If you can close a deal, I'm hiring you. If you can close a deal, I'm hiring you. If you can't, I'm firing you. Now, some of you would run off and claim I'm a racist. But that's because you've been brainwashed by these idiots like the Salvation Army had. Let me tell you about this about Salvation. I'm not going to read the rest of that article. I will never, ever, 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 ever put money in one of their kettles again. They have gone to the dark side. I'm not donating to them. just like I stopped giving money to the Red Cross when I found out what a scam that organization was. Just like Goodwill, I don't give stuff to Goodwill because they take my free stuff, pay crappy wages to people, exploit people, and for every $8 that they take in, they give out less than a $1 in charitable work towards uplifting people that are, you know, mentally incapable, physically incapable, or what have you. That was their goal. Their stated goal was, oh, well, we're going to start this nonprofit organization. We're going to take donated goods and we're going to help the community with people that are disabled be able to get trained and be self-independent. No, they exploit people. The money goes to enrich the people of Goodwill, the management, and the upper echelon. Red Cross, when I found out Elizabeth Dole was making $1 million a year salary working for that so-called nonprofit charity, and that was back in the early 90s, I opened my eyes. Anyway, we're getting ready to close this show out today. I had other stuff I was going to talk to, but I'm going to get into it next week. I'm only getting started on this awoke critical race theory leaning of my programming right now until they kick me off the radio or something. But I am a clarion here sounding the trumpets. Do not buy into this stuff. You are not a racist. You are not subconsciously a racist based on your ethnicity. Your ethnicity is you because that's where your genetic genome came from. Do a research on it. You have a genetic test taken. Ancestry.com. Find out where your people came from. I did. Anyway, got to go here. You guys have a great weekend. Dwight Lilly signing off.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Who owns you? If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays for Voices on the Wind with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons.
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Oh, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind.